from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up,
the lack of religious freedom anywhere is a threat to peace, prosperity, and stability everywhere. The right to freedom of religion and the ability to live according to the dictates of your own soul is under attack in the world. This must change.
That was Ambassador at Large for Religious Freedom Sam Brownback opening today's Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom at the U.S. State Department here in Washington, D.C. FRC's Travis Weber will join me later with more. Where is the unrest in the Middle East leading? Israel used their advanced David Sling missile defense system yesterday for the first time ever, and earlier today they shot down a Syrian fighter jet that crossed into Israeli airspace. Oklahoma Congressman Steve Russell, a member of the House Armed Services Committee, joins us. And despite the pummeling President Trump took in the media after his meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin, a new poll shows him at his highest level of support ever. Connor McGuire with WPA Intelligence is here to explain why. The website, TonyPerkins.com, and if you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Okay, yesterday, Israel used their David Sling missile defense system. They have three levels. This is the middle range system taking care of ballistic missiles. Two missiles came near their border with Syria, and they did not enter into Israeli airspace. However, earlier today, Israel shot down a Syrian jet that they said had breached their airspace. Then, of course, in the Middle East, there's the exchange between President Trump and Tehran. Well, joining us now is Congressman Steve Russell. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Oklahoma, and he serves on the House Armed Services Committee, and he is retired from the United States Army as a colonel. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to be with you.
All right. Are things heating up in the Middle East, or is it just my imagination?
Well, I think it is about the same level of tension. I mean, you know, airplanes being shot down notwithstanding. Israel has not backed off of its policy and its warning of the buffer and the area around the Syrian-Israeli border. The Golan Heights, obviously, that is a non-negotiable situation, and then, you know, who would they even turn this back over to with the instability that you have in Syria? So Israel has been very consistent with this, and the incident today and yesterday, the incidents are just a reminder of that consistency.
Well, it's a test of their alertness, and certainly they are alert. And I know there's been a lot of – you've got in the north, you've got the Golan Heights, and then down south near Gaza, you've had rockets coming in from there. So they've been pretty busy in the last week and a half.
They have. And once again, you know, you have to admire and marvel the Israeli determination when it comes to – their anti-missile defense systems and their surface-to-air missile systems. These are serious things. And, you know, Israel has had its own close calls, or even in some cases jets lost itself, as they have targeted Iranian forces in the southern zone of Syria, which they said that they will not tolerate Iranian troops in southern Syria at the buffer zone that they have marked out. So tensions will continue to remain. I do think that you will see some positive developments with the United States and Russia with regard to post-Syria. There, a lot of that has to be worked out. Prime Minister Netanyahu is certainly working with both President Trump and Vladimir Putin because Russia has troops in Syria. The United States has troops in Syria. We have managed to avoid the U.S.-Russian conflict in Syria. We all want to keep it that way. So the fact that the three parties are looking forward is good, but none of us are looking forward to having an Iranian problem in Syria.
Well, speaking of that, as I understand it, Congressman Russell, there on the Syrian-Israeli border by the Golan Heights, that the Syrian forces are moving forward against the rebel forces. Are we certain that those just are Syrian forces? Is there still concern that
some of them... They're being monitored very, very closely. In fact, if you've been to the Golan, which I'm sure you have, you know, you can stand on the top of the outpost there. You can see into Kenitra, which is the town that is occupied by some remnants of ISIS and others, so that they are going after some of that. And I am certain that they will continue to watch that very, very closely. And it's also worth noting that the Israelis, who are often portrayed as, you know, these heartless, terrible people or whatever, they have provided incredible medical aid all along the Kenitra-Golan region for... They don't ask what side you're on. They don't ask anything. If people have come in shot up, bloodied, wounded, they've rendered a lot of aid, no questions asked, and saved a lot of lives there just from humanitarian reasons. And this is something that just does not get reported, Tony.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Congressman Steve Russell of Oklahoma, my guest, and he's just coming off the House floor. They had votes going on, so Congressman,
yeah,
I appreciate you.
Yeah, I'm walking over to votes right now.
I appreciate you working us in, joining us here. Let me switch topics here before we lose you. Speaking of Iran, the war of words, if you will, between the president and Tehran. Is this more of the president in his negotiation mode, where he did the same thing with North Korea, brought them to the table? Is he moving to bring Iran back to the table for negotiations?
I don't see that. I think that the president fundamentally believes that the situation with the Iranians and the entire nuclear Iran deal was flawed from its inception. I don't, you know, I mean, I can't speak for the president, but, you know, looking at his actions and statements, he doesn't trust the activities of the Iranians and the things that they are doing. The sanctions will remain. He has leveraged and worked very hard in Europe to, you know, make the case with our allies, Great Britain, you know, a lot of our Western allies there. Germany, you know, Germany is probably the most reluctant of the allies because they saw a lot of economic opportunity that would come from the Iran nuclear deal. But I think my own assessment is that the EU is probably moving on and realize that, yeah, this deal isn't going to hold up. So I would be shocked if the president saw that this is something that we need to somehow bolster up or save.
Iran right now is under a lot of economic pressure, as well as, I mean, they're being isolated as a result of these sanctions, but their economy's in really bad shape.
It is, but it's not without being deserved. You know, the Iranians, they continue to do astounding human rights violations. They continue to violate many of the provisions already, even with the JCPOA. You know, those that try to portray them as the poor, picked-on country, that just does not square with the facts.
What do you think is going to be the outcome there in Iran? Are we going to be able to have a peaceful resolution of their pursuit of nuclear capabilities, or is this going to lead to a confrontation?
I think, actually, the sanctions have gotten us to where we are, and I think a regimen of sanctions will continue that. Unfortunately, the JCPOA, it kind of provided a little bit of relief to them, you know, pallets of cash. You had, you know, General Soleimani, you know, with the Iranian Republican Guard. They have been able to foment and foster a lot of activities in Yemen and Syria and other places. But the sanctions work. You know, so I think that you will see that continue. And if Europe gets back to a posture of doing that, we will see them wanting to come back to a resolution.
All right. Congressman Steve Russell, I know you got to go in the House chamber and vote. I appreciate you joining us. As always, great to talk with you.
Yeah, thank you, Tony. Appreciate all that you do.
All right. Thank you. Congressman Steve Russell of Oklahoma, retired colonel with the United States Army. And a member of the House Armed Services Committee, so he keeps his finger on the pulse of these things. I I know the president's been criticized for his all caps tweet warning Iran about their threats and their saber rattling with the United States. You know, quite frankly, folks, I'm actually happy that we have a commander in chief, a leader who is willing to stand up to the bullies of the world and put American interest first. I don't care if he tweets in all caps or whatever. He's sending a message. And what continues to get the media, I think, is that he goes around the media. He doesn't use the media. He goes around the media. And this media, you know, we've talked about it many, many times. But with each passing day, more and more we see the media's hostility. The media is really the opposition party. And I was reading an article. Actually, it was discussing the president's poll numbers, which we're going to talk about a little bit later with one of our friends over at WPA Intelligence. This president is not competing against the Democrats as a Republican. He is competing against the media, which happens to be, you know, we now see very clearly that they're in the pocket of the left. You know, there's always been some suspicion. But in this environment, they've teamed up with the political left in this country, and they have become a part of the opposition party. This president, I'm not sure there's anything that he could do that they would not criticize or that they might applaud him for. You name it. Maybe he could cure cancer, and they would complain that he was putting doctors out of business. I mean, there's no end to this. But I think on the foreign policy front, the president is showing strength again. Now he's doing it in his own way. I probably wouldn't do it that way, but I'm not the president. But he is showing strength, and he's putting America first. And I think it is. People say, well, it's upsetting the whole world, our allies. You know, sometimes to get things back in order, you got to mix it up a little bit. And under the last administration, things had gotten completely out of whack. And so to change it, to realign it, if you will, it's like going to a chiropractor. If you get adjusted, you're going to be sore. Well, getting everything back in its proper place and balance may upset a few folks. But I, for one, am glad that we once again, and it's been a long time since we've had a commander-in-chief, stands up for America. All right. When we come back, we're going to be talking about, what are we going to be talking about? We're going to be talking about the ministerial that's taking place here in Washington, D.C., today, Ambassador Sam Brownback kicked it off, 3 days of meetings to focus, first time ever, to focus on the importance of religious freedom globally. America's taking a lead. This is under the Trump administration. And there are folks that were here today from all parts of the world that have been persecuted for their faith, all different religions. Today, they were given a voice, bringing attention to the fact that this is happening at unprecedented levels, but people now are watching, and America's going to do something. That's next. Don't go away.
You've seen the news. Christian cake bakers and florists were targeted by LGBT activists for their beliefs about marriage and forced out of business. The Christian adoption providers are also being targeted for believing that children deserve a mother and a father to raise them. In 3 states and 2 large cities, faith-based adoption providers have been forced out of providing needy children with stable homes because of their beliefs about marriage, and this trend shows no signs of stopping. With the adoption rate in the United States steadily dropping for the last 17 years, discriminating against faith-based adoption providers will only make the problem worse by forcing agencies who serve children in need of loving families out of the marketplace. This is why laws are needed to protect these agencies at the federal and state level. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/adoption.
Let's keep the momentum going in this fall's election by voting your values. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. Now is the time to stand for biblical truth and fight for faith, family, and freedom in the public square. To be equipped for this mission, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st through 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Invited and confirmed speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, Laura Ingraham, Diamond and Silk, Kirk Cameron, Dana Lash, Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin. On September 21st through 23rd, stand with Values Voters to keep the momentum going. Visit valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808 for more information.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
This is the first ever ministerial to advance religious freedom that in our account and recollection and review of history has ever taken place. We're absolutely delighted you're here for this truly historic event. I've already had interesting pictures taken with different people of different faiths standing side by side, smiling, joyous, and I look forward to many more of those taking place.
That was an ambassador at large for international religious freedom, Sam Brownback, this morning as he kicked off, as he mentioned, the first ever ministerial to advance religious freedom, and FRC was there, and including FRC's Vice President for Public Policy, Travis Weber. Travis, welcome back.
Thank you,
Washington
Tony.
Watch. All right, this is significant. We've talked about it yesterday, but let's give us a kind of an overview of what you saw today.
Yeah, it was a really good day, really exciting to be there. Obviously, kicked off with Ambassador Brownback's remarks, and then we had interspersed testimonies of those who had been persecuted throughout the day. And they did a really good job of integrating some powerful stories to help people see what's occurring around the world. We heard from a Chinese pastor's wife who he has been harassed for his peaceful religious activity and humanitarian work in that area of the world. Heard from a Uyghur Muslim who's been monitored and detained by the government and what they're doing to that community in China. Heard from a Pakistani Christian whose family member has been killed for his faith and living out his faith in Pakistan, along with a Rohingya lawyer, some North Korean persecuted Christians. Heard from them directly, and then Pastor Brunson's family. So heard a lot of powerful stories today. Interspersed with them, we heard from folks who could help groups leverage religious freedom advocacy, grant foundations, how to access grants money for those who are doing work in the area. Heard from producers, Mark Burnett, on telling stories and really explaining the issue to people. And we also heard from closing it out, Director Mick Mulvaney talking about his experience in the Middle East and highlighting the issue. So really packed day, interspersed in all of that, conversations with advocates, making connections for FRC's work in this area. So a pretty good day overall.
Yeah, I was wearing my USERF hat today. I was meeting with Egyptian members of the Egyptian delegation to follow up from a meeting there last November. Let me go back. I want to play another clip of Ambassador Brownback kind of setting the stage this morning for why everyone should be interested in this issue of religious liberty. Play clip number four.
Where religious freedom is promoted, economic opportunity grows, security increases, and people flourish. Countries seeking to be more free and economically prosperous must devote themselves to protecting this fundamental right of humanity. Protection for this freedom, along with the freedoms of peaceful assembly, association, and expression, are foundations for a flourishing society. So ours is a great task. If successful, more people around the world will experience a burst of freedom that they have never known, a freedom that will yield great improvements for humanity and an expanding atmosphere of peace.
So, Travis, religious freedom is not just for the religious community. I mean, everyone, study after study shows us, whether it's economic issues, whether it's defense issues and stabilization, political stabilization, everyone benefits when religious freedom prospers.
It's very true. Whole societies benefit, whether people recognize it or not, whether they worship or not, regardless of how they worship. We want people to be able to choose how they're going to worship, obviously within the contours of an organized society, an organized civil government, ordering itself around order, liberty. But within that, people being free to choose to live out their faith. Because when they do that, when they do not feel pressured by the government, coerced by the government or fellow citizens, then they don't react against those citizens violently or otherwise, or react against that government. This produces a peaceful, stable situation. So this is a very important message to communicate to other governments, communicate to people around the world. Obviously, within this, we must define religious freedom, and we define it by adherence to one's faith, robustly protected, but not compromised or modified or directed by the government in any way. It's directed by the religious communities, by their obligation to God. And this is very important, because we can't have a watered-down concept where there's relative truth and relativism and everything's meaningless, so there's no objective truth. We must have robust, objective truth, but living side by side with people who may disagree with us.
Now, today's focus was on civil society, non-government organizations. So what were some of the takeaways?
Some of the takeaways were, one, what I just mentioned, because you see this idea of religious freedom, people define it differently in their minds when they use the term. So it's crucial that when we talk about it, we make clear to people that we're talking about a robust definition. We may disagree with people who differ from us denominationally or as a matter of faith, but we respect their ability to live side by side with us peacefully. Crucial, we define it this way. We can't allow it to be watered down. We can't allow it to be compromised by other agendas, as unfortunately it has often been around the world. In terms of how we talk about it, that was a big takeaway. The other takeaway was explain it simply to people. They don't inhabit our world. They must understand what we're talking about, why it's important to them. Really important to explain it, communicate it using media, using the tools at our disposal.
So what's on tap for tomorrow?
So tomorrow we're going to continue to hear from organizations who are and advocates who are expert in their issue area, those who focused on economic prosperity and the connection to religious freedom, national security and its connection to religious freedom, other areas. We'll hear about that. We'll also have the opportunity to, which we're going to continue to do, to make connections and work and share information with organizations that are also focused on this. I heard today from groups very happy with what FRC has been doing on this, really pleased with our support for the concept of religious freedom and its protection around the world. We hope to continue that work tomorrow.
And by the way, folks, the State Department is live streaming this event, and it's archived on their site. You can just go to Google State Department, U.S. State Department. It'll take you to their homepage, and then you'll see where it talks about the ministerial. Just click on that, and you can actually see some of these testimonies. Some of them are not up there for protecting the identities of people, but there's a lot of information to be had there. Travis, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tony.
I'm sure we'll be talking to you tomorrow and more this week. All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, despite the pummeling the president has taken in the press after his meeting with Vladimir Putin, guess what? His poll numbers are going up. We're going to talk about that next with WPA Intelligence. Don't go away. We're back right after this.
You've seen the news. Christian cake bakers and florists were targeted by LGBT activists for their beliefs about marriage and forced out of business. The Christian adoption providers are also being targeted for believing that children deserve a mother and a father to raise them. In 3 states and 2 large cities, faith-based adoption providers have been forced out of providing needy children with stable homes because of their beliefs about marriage, and this trend shows no signs of stopping. With the adoption rate in the United States steadily dropping for the last 17 years, discriminating against faith-based adoption providers will only make the problem worse by forcing agencies who serve children in need of loving families out of the marketplace. This is why laws are needed to protect these agencies at the federal and state level. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/adoption.
Let's keep the momentum going in this fall's election by voting your values. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. Now is the time to stand for biblical truth and fight for faith, family, and freedom in the public square. To be equipped for this mission, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st through 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Invited and confirmed speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, Laura Ingraham, Diamond and Silk, Kirk Cameron, Dana Lash, Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin. On September 21st through 23rd, stand with Values Voters to keep the momentum going. Visit valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808 for more information.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you're with us on this Tuesday afternoon. The president's job approval rating is actually going up. An NBC News Wall Street Journal poll released on Sunday showed President Trump's approval rating rising to 45%, his highest level in that poll since taking office. Now, Democrats are grappling with President Trump's ability to navigate the political turbulent waters. I mean, after all, he was just pummeled in the press after his summit with Vladimir Putin. So what's behind this? With us now is Connor McGuire. He's a senior strategist for WPA Intelligence. Connor, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right. How do we explain the president gets beaten up, for 72 hours straight or a week? Well, of course, he's been beaten up since he's been in office. But in particular, over his comments, his press conference with Vladimir Putin. But yet his polling numbers going up.
Of course. You know, people say this, the more the media hates on President Trump, the stronger support of Republicans and conservatives feel for the president. They understand that he, doesn't get a fair shake from the media. And sometimes when he starts, in a meeting and starts talking about things, the media will jump on something and just hound him for that. And you couple that with, that unfair shake, you couple that with how he's actually doing running the country and being very successful, the economy doing well. You've got to see a lot of Republicans and voters see that Trump, is doing a good job and they're going to, really judge him by his actions.
So what does that say about the media? I think it almost says as much about the media as it does about Trump, that the more they attack him, the more people are drawn toward him because, in my view, they distrust and despise the media.
Absolutely. And this has been one thing that Trump has talked about it since day one, and it continues from the very beginning of the campaign to the beginning time in the office, in his office, his presidency. The media just doesn't give a fair shake, goes at him every chance they get. And a lot of times the media, will get too fast to make a move, and it'll be obvious that they're very slanted and trying to push one agenda. When you have the media every day, CNN, MSNBC, talking about the same things over and over again without really, even fact-checking themselves, it gets people pretty upset, and they want to give the president a shot. The president is doing well. People are seeing more money in their paychecks. Their friends are employed. People have jobs. You've got to see this. Voters see this total disconnect in this narrative that the mainstream media is pushing compared to what the results in this country.
And, of course, some on the Democratic side not wanting to acknowledge that, and some in the media saying that, you know, Trump is only benefiting because of a strong economy. And that's why his numbers remain high, and partly because his willingness to press cultural hot buttons that excite his base. But the Democrats go on to say, and I'm quoting from an article that I read earlier today from The Hill, that said Democrats argue that Trump's base is not big enough to sustain electoral success, either in November's midterm election or his 2020 election. It appears that his numbers have not moved since the last election in terms of going downward. They've only moved up. So I don't know how they would explain him not being able to sustain a base of support.
Hey, so there's two things on that. One, you know, Trump's approval is, for all the talk about it, stayed in this pretty narrow range. It hasn't really moved too much. And it's also better than a lot of presidents where they were at this point in their terms in recent history. But then you also take a look at going into the November 2016 elections. The media was pushing this narrative that President Trump was going to get beat. There were no core voters that made up the Trump coalition. That was just blatantly wrong. Seeing voters, you know, workers, people that had turned out all across the country, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Florida, you see a lot of hardworking people that understood that they need someone to actually pay attention to America, American jobs, and fight for that. And that's kind of what they saw. As we go into the November elections, you see that, you know, the congressional generic ballot is now within 6 points, I think, from this poll. It's getting narrower and narrower, and you see Republican enthusiasm gaining. And conservatives understand that if they want to make sure the country goes in the direction that we all believe it should go in, we need to have President Trump and a congressional, House and Senate that can help the president get these things done. And you see it every day with these things narrowing out in the states, and especially when you take a look at the Supreme Court. You've got more options for the president to really shape the direction of this country, and that's going to really boost up enthusiasm among Republicans.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the Republicans are going to really, you know, although he's not on the ballot, he is on the ballot. They're going to ride President Trump's coattails because of his policy initiatives and his promises that he's kept.
Yeah.
I think this election's about his agenda. Connor McGuire, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Connor McGuire with WPA Intelligence. As I see it, this president, he's doing what he said he was going to do, and he's not pulling any punches. He's not he's unlike any other in terms of kind of bellying up to the media and trying to win them over. He's just doing what he said he was going to do. All right, when we come back, we're going to go to the phone lines. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come right after this.
You've seen the news. Christian cake bakers and florists were targeted by LGBT activists for their beliefs about marriage and forced out of business. The Christian adoption providers are also being targeted for believing that children deserve a mother and a father to raise them. In 3 states and 2 large cities, faith-based adoption providers have been forced out of providing needy children with stable homes because of their beliefs about marriage. And this trend shows no signs of stopping. With the adoption rate in the United States steadily dropping for the last 17 years, discriminating against faith-based adoption providers will only make the problem worse by forcing agencies who serve children in need of loving families out of the marketplace. This is why laws are needed to protect these agencies at the federal and state level. For more information on this important issue, Visit frc.org/adoption.
Let's keep the momentum going in this fall's election by voting your values. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. Now is the time to stand for biblical truth and fight for faith, family, and freedom in the public square. To be equipped for this mission, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st through 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Invited and confirmed speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, Laura Ingraham, Diamond and Silk, Kirk Cameron, Dana Lash, Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin. On September 21st through 23rd, stand with Values Voters to keep the momentum going. Visit valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808 for more information.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, don't do this very often, but I want to go back to two topics we talked about yesterday because we had a lot of folks calling in. We didn't get a chance to get to the to all the callers. We were talking about the RNC, the Republican National Committee, had a meeting last week, and they adopted a resolution which calls for state legislatures, school boards to change their policies as it pertains to the graphic sex ed material. Now, the platform, which I helped write, already speaks to the issue of the content. They promote sexual risk avoidance, which is abstinence, as opposed to the graphic Planned Parenthood HRC crafted graphic pornographic sex ed material, which is now in many schools. That said, what the RNC addressed was the fact that parents shouldn't be deceived or seen as obstacles to work around with these policies that require parents to opt their kids out, but rather parents should have full knowledge of what's going on in the public schools and have to opt their kids into this graphic material. So if you want to weigh in on that, give us a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Also, I told you we would do this, and we have it. It's at TonyPerkins.com. In regards to the other topic that was hot yesterday, that if you didn't get a chance to weigh in on that, you can do it. It pertains to a Bible display at an Air Force base in which the it's called a missing man display. And this was at Warren Air Force Base, in which Colonel Stacy Husser, based on a threat from the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, removed the Bible and replaced it with a, I think what they call a book of faith. It has some five DOD chaplain appointed faith groups with prayers. And that's replacing the Bible on the POW MIA table. Now, these things have happened before, but in most cases, we were able to get the Bible restored. Now, again, at the website, TonyPerkins.com, is a petition to sign to the Secretary of the Air Force, Heather Wilson, who actually has been good on this in the past. I wasn't a big fan of her when she was first appointed. But she has spoken out on behalf of religious freedom. So this is a petition that we're sending to her to address this issue at Warren Air Force Base and make sure that we put a stop to this, you know, right now, where the Bible is not considered to be, is being banned from these military installations. All right? So give us a call, 866-372-7234, if you want to weigh in on one of those topics. While you're doing that, let me just – another story that caught my attention today. You recall the Planet Fitness location in Florida. I think we talked about this. They terminated the membership of a woman who complained about a man in the woman's locker room. Now, the biological man reportedly identified as a woman. Now, this was not the first such incident with Planet Fitness. A similar situation occurred in Michigan. But Planet Fitness has defended its policy that pointedly puts women at – or potentially puts women at risk, saying they are, quote, a judgment-free zone. So when a woman complained about the fact that there was a male, biological male, in her locker room, she had her membership terminated. Now, she's taking action against them through the Liberty Council. But what was interesting is that Planet Fitness is not, well, I wouldn't say totally judgment-free. In Plaistow, New Hampshire, a man who stripped naked before working out at a New Hampshire gym, a Planet Fitness gym, told police officers that he thought he was in a judgment-free zone before being arrested. 34-year-old Eric Stagno of Haverhill, Massachusetts, was charged with indecent exposure, lewdness, and disorderly conduct on Sunday for taking off his clothes and exercising at the Planet Fitness location. Police say he walked back and forth and started doing poses on a yoga mat. He allegedly referenced Planet Fitness's slogan that it is a judgment-free zone. Stagno is free on bail and scheduled to be arraigned on September the 21st. He could not be reached by comment, according to this news article. So apparently Planet Fitness is not completely judgment-free, only judgment-free when it comes to political correctness. I'm telling you, at some point, all of that breaks down. It just does, unless you have, you know, as we have historically seen, traditional values rooted in natural law and biblical truth. Okay, those have withstood the test of time, but this nonsense where you can define your own reality, folks, it doesn't work. All right, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Diego in Illinois. Diego, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yeah, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
I've been listening. Good. I've been listening.
Diego, welcome to Washington.
I've been hearing you for weeks about what the school are teaching the children. Why the Department of Education put a stop to that?
Well, that is the Department of Education under the previous administration pushed a lot of this out. Republican administrations tend to allow local autonomy, which I myself support as well. I think it's easier to control and contain and influence at the local level. And so what we see happening is that many parents are just unaware of what is happening in their in the classrooms of their children. We need more parents to be a part of the parent-teacher associations, more parents to be looking at what their children are bringing home. And this is a part of this move to require parents to actually opt their kids into this controversial and oftentimes graphic material so that the parents will stop and say, wait a minute, what is this? And ask more questions. In fact, we've had some cases that we discussed yesterday where parents have not been given the information. They've been refused. They were refused when they asked to see what material was being shared with their students. So, Diego, this is really more of a local issue that state legislatures and, in particular, school boards need to take up. So, one of the things is parents need to be asking your children, what are they being taught, and if they see something, you know, encourage your kids. You know, as TSA says, if you see something, say something. Encourage your kids to come home and tell you so you can weigh in. That's, look, comes down to parental involvement, and you're going to get tired of hearing me say this, but God has given you both the authority and the responsibility to train up your children. Now, you can delegate the authority. You can send your kids to the public school. Now, I don't recommend it, depending on where you live. You might have a good school district. That's fine. But you need to understand that you're delegating that, but you cannot delegate the responsibility. God will hold you and I as parents responsible for what our children are taught. And, you know, it's important at an early age to begin those conversations with your kids so that you have these open channels of communication so that your kids, when they see something, they have questions, that they feel free to come home and they can ask mom or dad, that they can, you know, say, what is this? And these things are fine to talk about in the home, in the proper setting and in the proper way. But if you're not talking to your kids about these things, someone is. And you know, we've always, my wife in particular is, of course, we homeschool, but still, you know, you don't isolate your kids from all, you know, all of the different influences that are out there. But we had the open communication where if they saw something, they didn't quite understand, they asked the question. So we had those conversations. And I think it's important for parents to have conversations with their kids about these things. But it's also important that we not think that, well, okay, my kids are okay. I can protect my kids. And this is what I say to a lot of parents who homeschool their kids. That's great. I applaud that and encourage it, as a matter of fact. But you still need to be concerned about what's happening in your local public school because that is influencing the values of your community and by extension of the nation. When our kids are being taught, and there's I'm going to probably talk about this later in the week, but a new study out, a health study on the effects of the hormone treatment for transgenderism and the devastating health consequences of that are not being discussed, but yet children, young people, being encouraged to move down this path that puts them at high risk for blood clot men taking estrogen, males, I should say, heart attack. I mean, just all kinds of negative health consequences. But that's not being talked about. In this stuff, the kids, their minds are being filled with this stuff in a classroom. A lot of this coming through the radical sex ed curriculum. So, you know, as we were talking about yesterday, shouldn't parents have to opt their kids in as opposed to opt them out? Is that a policy you'd like to see in your local school district? Parents have to give their permission to the school to teach their kids, this controversial graphic material as opposed to a parent having to, you know, opt their kid out, take the initiative themselves. So make the school take the initiative to reach the parent and the parent give their approval for the children to be in this training, if you will. Indoctrination is what it really is. And again, so what do you think? Give me a call, 866-372-7234. Should parents be able to have the right to protect their kids and opt in as opposed to opt them out? And again, as we were talking about, as we've been talking about, the material, you need to know where it's coming from. This is not the kind of stuff that you and I had when we were in school. Straightforward biology and the basics of sex ed. This is being put forth by Planned Parenthood, the Human Rights Campaign, which is the largest advocacy organization for homosexuals, GLSEN, which is the Gay, Straight, Lesbian Alliance, Education Alliance. They're putting this material out there. And it obviously comes with their spin, and it's about indoctrination. Parents, you need to know this is going on, and you need to take action. All right, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Texas, where Cynthia is on the line. Cynthia, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. Well, I'm glad you took my call. Thank you. I just wanted to comment on what you were saying about the school curriculum that has just passed, and that I can't believe that it has. I don't know how that happened, how anybody could not go and vote against that. But I agree with you that it should be that the parents should request it, and that it should not just be forced on, especially these little children. They're so innocent. And told about these things that they don't even need to be told about. I'm just horrified.
I wish more parents were. Well, thank you, Cynthia. I think a big part of the problem is that parents do not know. We had, a few months back, Activist Mommy had the sex ed sit-out day, which brought a lot of attention to this curriculum that was being promoted by Planned Parenthood and others. And so I think when parents saw it, they were horrified. But they're not seeing it. With the opt-out, they might get a notice that comes home and says, we're going to have this curriculum. If you don't want your child to go through it, just sign this out and send it back in. Well, if it got home, and who knows if it did, because there's no paper trail. This way, it reverses, and as I said, puts the onus on the school to make sure that the parent is informed and gives the authority for the school to expose their kid to this material. That might prompt the parents, I hope it does, prompts them to ask more questions about what is in the curriculum. But this stuff is dangerous, and it's polluting the minds of our kids. And again, it's not all schools, not all educators, but there are those organizations that are behind this that have their own motives. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, "When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing."
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.